1980s, there was a group of organizations of the blind, of and for the blind in the United States that came together. They named themselves the JOE Committee, Joint Organizational Effort. And the first task that they undertook was to try to do something on a national level to address the Braille literacy crisis. This led to the idea of developing a test that would measure Braille competency without some of the complex rules that, I suppose using the word arcane would be unfair, but some of the more, yeah, just dawned on me, I'm in a room full of transcribers and trying to think of a graceful way to back down. You know, the microphone never fails when you want it to. So anyway, Library of Congress agreed to undertake the process of developing a Braille competency test. A large group was put together, a committee, to talk about what that test might look like. And very early on, the test began to look like a Christmas tree, with everybody wanting to add to the test some new element in order to ensure some sort of ultimate level of competency. For example, people said, if this is going to be a test that teachers will take, then we need to make sure that the teachers not only know Braille, but know how to instruct the child to how to teach the child to read using Braille. If a teacher is going to prepare materials, then we need to make sure that the teacher knows how to do tactile graphics or knows the right format for the best presentation of various types of materials. So you can see this could get away from you very quickly. And thanks really to the leadership of the Library of Congress, the test remained very focused on assessing a person's competence in the Braille code. A lot of work was done on developing a test. It was essentially completed. There were some problems related to the pilot testing of the test, and the project was abandoned. I suppose that would have been about the mid-1990s. But the need for a test did not go away. In the early 2000s, the then director of the National Library Service for the Blind in the United States, Frank Kurt Silke, asked the National Federation of the Blind if they would take on the task of finishing the Braille competency test. The Federation agreed to do this, and in finishing the test, as I say, most of the really difficult work had already been completed, but there was some work that needed to be done, and we put together a committee of individuals, and Dr. Wormsley, who is here, she and I co-chaired that committee, and were able to get the test in a form where it could be administered. We worked through all of the test administration issues, and I won't go into great detail about that, but you would be amazed at some of the complexities that you wouldn't have anticipated. The test went through its final validation process and was field tested in 2006 and 2007. At that point, the test was ready to go, but we needed an entity to take on the responsibility of administering the test, also maintaining the test. A number of organizations were approached, and it was finally agreed that the National Blindness Professional Certification Board would administer what we now call National Certification in Literary Braille. The National Blindness Professional Certification Board had already been in the business of administering a test to certify individuals in teaching orientation and mobility using a technique called structured discovery, and this was a logical extension to its mission. The test has four parts. The test is provided to each test taker either in large print, 18-point type, or in Braille, and that would be a combination of contracted and uncontracted Braille depending on the specific task. Four sections include a Braille writer section, where an individual is asked to write a passage, well, series of passages in contracted Braille using the Braille writer. They are also required in a separate section to demonstrate proficiency using a slate and stylus. I suspect there are some people listening in who may have never seen a slate and stylus. Some of us are old enough that we used to use it to inscribe Braille on stone tablets and so on. But that was considered to be an important skill. And I think, by the way, that came about because of that early concern that the primary target audience would be teachers, although the test is not limited to teachers of blind children. And the idea that if you're going to produce something on the fly or make a quick correction to something, you needed a certain proficiency in the slate and stylus. There is also a section of proofreading where there are errors that are embedded into a Braille text, and the individual has to find and correct those errors. And the last section is a multiple choice section. Individuals who are taking the test are allowed to use the English Braille American Edition. It is provided to them. They can use it for the first three sections. They may not use a reference guide in the multiple choice section. So the test has been developed. The next thing really is to have it gain wider acceptance. And that is really a confidence issue more so than a technical issue. The test is a very good test. By the way, it's really quite rigorous. During the pilot test, well, that was one concern, was that the test might be scaled back so far from what we expect of transcribers that it would really allow for people who had only a rudimentary grasp of contracted Braille to be able to pass, but that's not the case. It's a difficult test. During the pilot phase, 48 individuals took the test. Of the 48, 23 passed the test, all four sections. That's a pass rate of 48%. Since the test has been administered by the National Blindness Professional Certification Board, 136 individuals have taken the test, and of those 136, 71 have passed all four sections, for a total, if my math is correct, of 94 individuals. That's a good start, but we're a long way from having as many people certified and really recognized as having good Braille competency. As I said, the test is not restricted to teachers, although there's a logical reason to target teachers as the primary audience, but it's available to anybody who would like to know whether, in fact, their knowledge of the Braille code is adequate. This, I think, speaks to, again, the issue of trying to increase the literacy among, or particularly Braille literacy, among school-age children in the United States. It is not the only solution, but I think it is an important piece of the array of strategies that are needed to try to make a real difference in the literacy rate of blind children. So what is the literacy rate of blind children in the United States? Well, numbers have been bandied around for a long time. Typically, we hear that about 10% of blind children are Braille readers, and I think in a literal sense, you could argue that that's so. The only data that are available are collected by the American Printing House for the Blind each year. And let me just quickly give you a few numbers here. I won't get into a lot of data. But as of the most current reporting period, the American Printing House for the Blind reported that there were 59,355 students included in their annual census. Of those, visual readers constituted 15,914, or 27.1%. Of that total, Braille readers were 5,560, or 9.1% of the total population. Auditory readers were 4,630, or 7.7%. Pre-readers, 13,005, or 22%. The largest category is one that troubles me a good bit. It is called non-reader. And and the non-reader category of the nearly 6,000 was 20,246, or 34.1%. Well, some argue that to simply say that 9.1%, or roughly 10% of blind school-aged children are using Braille is unfair because these numbers include, for example, pre-readers. These may be children who are not yet in school. And if you assume that everybody who is classified as a non-reader should or is correctly classified has, in effect, no reading potential, you could take them out of the mix. So under the best scenario, if you look at what I'm going to call the three categories of active reader, meaning they're either a visual reader, a print reader, or an auditory reader, and I suppose I have to interject here, I don't regard auditory as a reading medium, but I'll set that also aside for another conversation. But if you look at print reader,